cold as a razor blade, as tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man. I don't want a piece of the world. I want the whole world.
I make my own rules because it's much easier that way.
Trust me.
What's up, everybody? This is Marcus D'Angelo, and this is The Snake Pit with Jake Roberts. And, of course, we could not do it without the man himself, the pop culture icon, Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm smoking hot today, buddy. I'm ready to beat my chest and scream, man. I'm going to dig talking about this Mid-South stuff.
Man, it is a fun topic. And, you know, ordinarily we try to do things where it's, you know, it happened on the calendar, but you brought this idea up and it's like, man, we cannot resist this. It's, we're talking about Mid-South wrestling and particularly one night in June and a little encounter with the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, the reason this all happened is because JYD had left Mid-South and it left a great need for a black superstar. Well, Bill Watts tried turning Butch Reed babyface. That did not work. He tried a couple other guys. Then he wound up trying Brickhouse Brown briefly. And then he wound up hooking up with a guy called the Snowman.
Cannot wait to talk to you about the Snowman.
Oh, my God. Snowman was a great guy, but my God, let's just say he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Well, and there's some controversy with him in the Jarrett territory in Memphis, which we won't get into too much, but because we're going to stick with Mid-South in this time period. But really, before we can do much of anything, Jake, I think we need to kind of do a little build up for Muhammad Ali and his crossover into pro wrestling as a whole.
Absolutely.
You know, the story of boxing and wrestling intermingling is, it's pretty fascinating overall, because not only do you get a lot of intersecting stories, but there's also, you see how much each sport has helped each other over the years, where one is kind of supporting the other. And we'll get into that. Are you a boxing fan, Jake?
Yeah, sure. Aren't we all? I mean, there's only two real sports left. Let's face it. It's not boxing. And it's not wrestling. It's roller derby and synchronized swimming. That's all that's left that's totally real. Everything else, predetermined.
Even football?
Oh, God, yeah. Are you kidding me? Dallas Cowboys could not have looked that bad this last weekend.
Man, they must have been trying to make it interesting.
Serious?
Huh?
Somebody must have put some something in their cereal or something, man. I don't know, man. It was horrible.
I think Jerry Jones just likes stressing people the fuck out, including me, man, because that was, man, let me tell you, that last-minute victory. So this is actually going to be dropping on the 27th, so this happened weeks ago as people are hearing
it. Is it really Jerry Jones or is it Jim Jones?
Jim?
Yeah.
Is that the guy with the Kool-Aid?
Absolutely. I think he gave them some bad Kool-Aid, man.
So something happened. Let's hope they can pull the nose up by the time we're hearing this on the 27th. But when you were growing up, Jake, were there any boxers or that you liked or that stood out to you?
Oh, God, yeah. I was growing up, man. It was Cassius Clay, bro.
Muhammad Ali himself.
Everybody hated him. You know, at the time he wasn't a babyface. He was a heel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody wanted to see him get his ass whipped. But it just didn't happen. And he just kept running his mouth. And more than he ran his mouth, the more people hated that son of a bitch.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's a big part of this crossover between wrestling and boxing. Let's set the stage a little bit. Muhammad Ali rose to prominence in the 60s and 70s, and he became this hugely recognized athlete all across the world. He had this brash attitude and flashy style that people were really drawn to. And Jake, Dominic is going to pull up this picture from 1965. This iconic picture of Ali standing over Sonny Liston would have been taken around the time you were 10 years old.
Yeah, the punch that nobody saw.
Which is just a wild story. So if you're unfamiliar with it, it looked like nobody touched Sonny Liston. He fell down. And that Muhammad Ali isn't taunting him. He's telling him to get up and fight him like a man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really iconic, strange photo in a strange time in boxing where they were fixing matches, which sounds a little familiar, right?
It's very unfortunate that Sonny Liston died a few months later in an alley in Philadelphia full of heroin.
Certainly makes you wonder.
Wonder what happened. I fall down. That didn't work for us.
Certainly makes you wonder. Do you remember a lot of this stuff with Muhammad Ali as you were growing up, seeing him rise to prominence?
Oh, yeah. Sure do, man. I mean, hell, everybody did. Howard Cosell, one of the greatest announcers of all time, would, you know, he brought Ali up to the front because him and Cosell would get in these arguments and stuff, man, and they were just golden to listen to. Oh, my God, Ali can talk some crap, boy.
He could, and, you know, it's
and he backed it up.
That's got to be what was the most frustrating thing for his opponents was he would talk all this shit, and then it's like you can't do anything about it.
I remember him just beating Jerry Quarry half to death, man. I mean, he beat him half to death. The only one that stood up to him and went the distance was, oh, my God, from New Jersey. Oh, God almighty. The Bayonne Brawler.
Chuck Wepner.
Chuck Wepner.
Yeah.
Chuck Wepner, man. And he's a good cat.
Met Chuck?
Oh, yeah, I met Chuck. Met the policeman around him. It seems that back in the day, if a fight broke out in the bar, the police would go by Chuck's house and grab him and take him up there and let him beat the shit out of him.
That dude was nothing to piss with. And actually, I've got a little footnote on him here in the notes coming up. So we'll get there. So Ali says that in 1961, he met professional wrestler Gorgeous George, who he really, really liked. Yeah. And Gorgeous George apparently told him something to the effect of, look, fans are going to pay. When you talk a bunch of shit, fans are going to pay to come see you win because they like you and they think it's fun, or they're going to come pay to watch you get your ass kicked.
It doesn't matter what they're there for.
Yeah, as long as they're in the building.
As long as they come, man.
It's pretty incredible to see these professional wrestling tactics employed by somebody in what's considered a legitimate sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Dusty Rhodes influenced him a lot, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think that he and Dusty actually influenced each other, and I was reading about how they were supposed to have a match at the Orange Bowl at one point that got scrapped, which is, man, what could have been that is.
That would have been something, man.
So this attitude of Ali's, it would go on to change the face of not just boxing, but now MMA and this notion of drumming up business by manufacturing personal issues between opponents who you really don't have a personal issue with. You're just doing it for the sake of getting people in the building.
Out of the blue, man. I mean, that's whenever he was taking his bus and pulling it up in front of people's houses and getting on the loudspeaker and telling them to come outside and fight. And drove the guys crazy, man. They couldn't believe this guy was doing this stuff.
You know, in today's boxing or MMA, you know, that kind of thing is pretty commonplace, especially with the emergence of the internet. But now, like back then, that shit just was not happening.
Oh, it didn't happen at all, man.
Right. There was this kind of mutual respect.
People wanted him arrested. People wanted him killed. People wanted him everything, man. They wanted him charged and thrown in jail. And he just kept talking crap, man. Him and Boondini Brown. Who was his handler?
Well, and he was there in the Superdome with you.
Absolutely, man.
We'll get there. Jake, were you familiar with Gorgeous George's work at all? I know he passed away long before you got in the business, but
I think every wrestler, well, from my day, knew who Gorgeous George was. You know, and the utmost respect for him, and he was a showman. He was before his time, way before his time. If he come along now, he'd just be another guy.
Yep.
You know? Except he'd carry it off so damn well, he'd be the main event.
He's a guy who inspired guys like the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, who then went on to, of course, inspire another famous Nature Boy. So, again, interesting. All these
Buddy Landell, crossovers. Buddy Landell?
Buddy Landell, of course, yeah.
Buddy Landell, yeah. That's what you're talking about.
That man was a character.
Yes, sir, he was.
Unfortunately. Just to put things in full context, too, this was happening right in the middle of the civil rights movement in America. So late 50s to mid to late 60s. So for as many fans, a crazy time. And for as many fans as there were out there clamoring to see Ali succeed, there were just as many who wanted to see this outspoken.
It was black versus white.
That's it.
No doubt about it, man. I mean, the blacks loved Ali because he was kicking everybody's ass and would stand up and talk shit. And they loved that. And the white man hated it because that black man was running his mouth. And I loved it because I just thought it was funnier than shit. I was just a kid, though, you know.
Right. He was made for professional wrestling, was he not? He's using it to his advantage.
Absolutely.
Well, let's make a quick jump to 1976. We were in the 60s. Let's move on to the 70s. It was the year Ali had his infamous match with Inoki. But before he made it there, he actually had a few warm-ups. First, he stepped into the ring with the guy I know you know, Gorilla Monsoon, Vince Sr.'s WWWF, and he even took an airplane spin from Monsoon.
Yeah.
Jake, what do you think about just the concept fundamentally of combining wrestling and boxing?
I think it's great, man. It's entertainment. Come on. That's all it is. Hell, you know, if it was real, neither one of them would be in it. The only people in it would be, you know, Haku and people like that, you know.
I've heard it said that if wrestling was a shoot, Haku would still be undefeated.
That's right. It's true, brother. I can tell you some Haku stories. Woo-wee.
Well, we'll save it for another episode.
Yeah, buddy.
For right now, I haven't heard you talk much about Monsoon, period. Do you have any stories on him at all?
I love Gorilla, man. You know, of course, by the time I got to WWE, he wasn't quite the man he used to be. Sugar diabetes had done quite a job on him. And, his son, Joey Morella, he was a great referee, and we lost him too. But, Gorilla was great. I got along with him wonderfully. He'd say what he thought, you know, even if Vince didn't like it, he'd still say it. And one of the few people that did that.
Man, just a one-of-a-kind character. And to your point, I've heard other referees, actually, I believe Mike Chioda once told me that he feels that Joey Morella was the best referee there ever was.
Maybe.
What a shame, gone way too soon. Ali would go on. He would go on to work a couple worked warm up matches with the AWA before heading off to Japan for a match with Inoki.
Yeah,
apparently Ali was paid somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 million for the match, but unfortunately, it was considered a farce by most involved.
Oh yeah, it was horrible, man.
You watched it?
Yeah.
That weird. Like convoluted rules. They didn't know if it was a work or a shoot until like a day before. Just like such a weird situation.
Well, that's Japan for you.
Well,
they love their secrets.
I will say an estimated 1.4 billion people watched this match worldwide. So regardless of the quality of the match or how things turned out, I mean, that's got to be the best exposure professional wrestling has ever had, right?
Oh, no doubt.
So maybe to this day, I can't say for sure, but holy smokes.
That's quite a brainstorm. Whoever came up with that, it knocked it out of the park, man, as far as a great idea, but it just didn't pay off, man.
Inoki passed away not too long ago, a little bit earlier this year. Did you ever spend any time around him?
Yeah, I ran him out of the locker room with a snake, Tokyo.
Did you?
Sure as hell did.
We got to hear that one.
Oh, man, I chased him in the locker room. When I came in, he told me to get out. I'm like, fuck you. I'm not getting out. Take the snake. Go. And he's grabbing guys and pulling them in front of him, right? So I just tossed the snake over the top of him, you know, landed on Inoki, and he sprinted out of the locker room, man.
And why is he trying to kick you out?
He hated that snake, I guess.
Oh, okay. It was all about the snake.
Come to think about it, I haven't been invited back since.
So first it's Arsenio won't have you back, then it's Inoki.
I'm bad about burning bridges, man. I don't burn them, I nuke them.
I'm seeing a common thread with the snake here.
I didn't know that the snake jumped out of my hands.
Yeah, what can you do?
I try what I could.
Bring Jake back to Japan. We're gonna start a hashtag.
No. God, no.
Well, I did want to note, too, and you brought him up earlier, so here's a fascinating note about the significance of this match between Inoki and Ali, is Vince Sr. drew 32,000 people to Shea Stadium to watch a closed-circuit broadcast of Ali and Inoki as the main event, but live for the undercard was Chuck Wepner versus Andre the Giant.
And so, Chuck Wepner told me all about that.
Did he?
Yep.
What did he have to say about working with Andre?
It was a work, you know, and they had discussed it. And Wepner said that he just couldn't resist throwing one good one in.
He wanted to see if he could get him.
He wanted to see if he could knock the giant out.
How'd it go? I guess not great.
He said he fucking hit him. He said the next thing he knew, he was up in the air, and then he landed in the sixth row. Andre tossed him into the crowd.
Well, he learned. He wanted to try it.
Yeah, he was a great guy to boy to be hang out with, talk to. Webner, I really enjoyed, man.
We're going to talk about him a little bit more because this match
I had to stop him from kicking Hercules Hernandez's ass.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to whip Hernandez's ass, man.
You know, a lot of people would look at a guy like Chuck Webner. He's in good shape. He's, you know, you can tell he's an athlete, but Hercules was just a monster of a man. But Chuck Webner could have handled him very easily.
One punch.
Yep. Well, do you want to tell the story about what happened between those two?
Oh, man. Well, Hercules come into the bar. Yeah, I know. It's shocking. I was in a bar at the time. And I was in there with Webner, and there's a lot of fans in there, and we kind of got pushed together, you know. And we bumped into each other. And when I did, Hercules, you know, he stayed true to the business. Fuck you, Jake Roberts. I'll whip your ass right now, goddammit. Raise your hands. I'll knock you fucking out. And Webner said, let me handle this, Jake. And I'm like, oh, fuck no. No, 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 no. It's just, he's just playing, man. Take it easy. Take it easy. No, no, I want to knock that son of a bitch out. He don't come over here fucking talking shit like that to me. He wasn't talking to you, Chuck. He was talking to me. Well, it looked like he was talking to me. And then it was, nobody interrupts the guy that I'm talking to.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that Hercules did an about face and got the hell out of there.
Yeah, he did. He did. He was smart.
I don't blame him. Well, look, if our listeners don't know who Chuck Webner is, do yourself a favor. They did a really cool documentary on him on ESPN. Chuck Webner was a liquor salesman, but he was also kind of a mid-level boxer, and he actually knocked Ali down the year prior to in 1975, the year prior to this match with Inoki.
He went 15 rounds with Ali, too.
And went the distance. And does that sound familiar? It should, because that's the story of Rocky.
That's it, man. That's where it all come from.
And Chuck Webner was the man that Sylvester Stallone was inspired by. But here's what's really cool about this, Jake, is that this match with Andre the Giant also inspired Stallone in Rocky III for the Thunderlips scene.
Thunderlips scene, man.
So a match.
All ties together.
A match that resulted. They wouldn't have had this match if it wasn't for Ali and Inoki. And now they have this match. Stallone sees Webner, as you said, get thrown into the crowd. And the exact same thing happened in Rocky III. And that was Hulk Hogan's big break. So had it not been for Ali and Inoki, in theory, there may not have been a Hulkamania.
You got that right. That was a boost there, bro.
Absolutely wild. Absolutely wild, these kind of interweaving stories. Pretty incredible. All right, we're going to move on to 1985 and the build toward our subject today. So, earlier in the year, Ali appeared as a guest referee at WrestleMania 1, and his old enemy, Gorilla Monsoon, was on the call as Ali stood ringside for Hogan and Mr. T versus Piper and Orndorff. Here's an interesting note and something that's going to play into a story that I think you're going to be telling here in a little bit. During the match, Piper takes a shot from Ali and tumbles out of the ring. Now, this is notable because Piper pretty famously stated that he was not interested in selling much for Mr. T because the next day T would be back in Hollywood on the A-Team set and Piper would still be in the WWF. But in the meantime, he's perfectly happy to sell for Ali. So we're going to reveal why that's ironic here in a few minutes.
Sometimes you don't have a choice.
I think a guy like Ali could probably make you sell if he wanted to.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably make you wake up in the hospital if you wanted to.
Well, I'll tell you this from my experience. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what happened, if that's all right. Is that all right with you?
Yes, sir. Let's lay it out.
Well, you know, Bill Watts has been trying to make all these guys, and it wasn't happening. So he finally had to settle for the Snowman, which he was incredibly built, but not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Let's just say that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a hell of a body, though. And he was a little slow at doing things. But anyway, you got to do what you got to do. So Bill decided the best thing to happen would be Jake would get him over in the Superdome. And, of course, I had my tag team partner and my second, who was John Nord, all 320 pounds of him.
The future Berserker?
Yeah, future Berserker. He was going to be at ringside with me, so Snowman had to go out and get somebody to be at ringside for him. And when he come up with Ali, everybody went apeshit crazy. Muhammad Ali is going to be there, and he's going to be in his corner. Mundini Brown is going to be with him. Oh, my God. Of course, Ernie Ladd wasn't far behind either. And we went into the Superdome, man. We're going for the – I believe it was the TV title.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
And, of course, I was the champ. Imagine that, me having a belt. That's a weird concept. Anyway, somebody should have tried that.
That didn't happen very often.
No, it didn't. So anyway, we get in the match and we get it going and we get it hot and heavy. And all of a sudden the referee gets knocked down. When that happens, I'm telling Ali to get his dumb ass up or I'll knock his ass out. And me and Berserker start doubling up on Snowman. Well, I see Ali coming up. And I go over there to get him. Whenever I go over there to get him, he nails me with one. And I took it, you know. But I didn't go down. Did not go down. Berserker came over. He nailed Berserker. Berserker flew across the ring. All 320 pounds of him. I went back. Boom, he nailed me again. I did not go down. Did not go down. Berserker came back, took another one. Boom, flying across the ring. I go back and I get the third one. He nails me with that third one. And by luck, when he hit me, it spun me around right into the Snowman, who caught me and did the power slam. Beat me 1, 2, 3. Lucky sons of bitches.
Man, the fact that you were saying as a kid, here you were a Cassius Clay fan, and yeah, now you're face to face.
I just took 3 shots from him.
And remained standing.
The worst was not to come. When I get back to the locker room, Bill Watts catches me as I come in the door and he's chewing my ass, cussing me like a sailor, man, calling me everything in the book. I mean, he went off on me, spitting all over me when he's talking, that fat bastard. Anyway, he finally lets me go and Ali comes into the locker room. Well, now I'm wondering if Ali's going to be pissed. And Ali come up, put his hand out. I shook his hand, and he pulled me in close. He said, "You're a very smart young man. I'll be gone tomorrow. You'll be here next week. I understand. You're very smart, young man. You're very smart." He respected what I did.
How about that?
He respected it. It really filled my heart. Fuck you, Bill Watts. From my heart.
From me to you, pal.
Yeah, all day long from my heart.
Man, so we're going to be watching that here in a little bit.
Let's watch it, man.
Interaction with Ali. So we're gonna get there. I just think it's really incredible that Piper was like, yeah, I'll bump for Ali, but I'm not doing it for Mr. T. You don't bump for Ali. And then afterwards, he comes to you and says essentially what Piper said about T. Like, hey, look, I'll be gone tomorrow. So
yeah, absolutely, man. They got it. It wasn't a big deal.
Just incredible. What did you think about Piper's stance not to do anything for Mr. T? Do you think it's apples and oranges here?
I think it was wrong. You know, it wouldn't have hurt him to take a bump or something, you know.
It's not like T was a small man. He was pretty jacked up.
Yeah, he was jacked up. He looked better than Piper did.
Yeah, I mean, you see the size comparison. Piper's certainly taller, but, man, T's got all the muscle.
He's got all the muscle and got legs, too.
Yes, sir. So, all right, it's Ali was at WrestleMania, and now here we are. It's I think it's less than 2 months later, and he's in Mid-South.
Yeah.
So Bill Watts clearly was drawing inspiration from the WWF. He's tearing a page out of his book, right?
Well, desperate men do desperate things, man. Bill Watts seen the writing on the wall. He's seen the WWF was going to come through there and just wipe up everything. So he was trying to throw anything out there to hold on to his fan base.
And what was your relationship like with Bill at the time?
Shit.
I know it wasn't good by 92. He really screwed you out of something, which we'll talk about someday.
It was never my relationship with Bill. Oh, God, there he is.
There he is. The cowboy. You know,
don't get me wrong. I respect the man for what he can teach you about wrestling. But as far as a human being, he was ugly, racist, bully, bastard.
And it was like that between you and he from the start where he was
It was like that between him and everybody.
So he didn't get along with anyone.
No. Everybody hated that fucker.
I've heard a lot of people refer to him as a bully. And So here you are, you're a second generation wrestler. I know he had respect for your father. That didn't prevent him from giving you shit?
Oh, he disrespected my father right up in the open.
Wow.
He disrespected Ernie Ladd.
Unbelievable.
Called Ernie Ladd words that I won't say.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what word I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He openly called him that.
That is awful.
I was, and he knew, because he knew Ernie Ladd couldn't do anything about it because Ernie had to have the job.
You know, Ernie was a big man himself. Why?
6'9".
Why do you think he didn't catch on with Vince?
He was in such bad shape. His knees were gone, man. His knees were like that big around.
So by 1985,
his leg was this big around, but his knees were this big around.
My goodness.
It was just massive bone chips and crap, man. He'd had like 9 or 11 knee surgeries.
Wow.
You know, because back in those days, they didn't care about cut back chop blocks.
Mm-hmm.
They just come into the side of a guy's knees, man, take his freaking knees out.
Yeah, for reference, for anybody who's not familiar with Ernie Ladd, before wrestling, before he got into wrestling, he was an NFL player and a good one.
Yes, sir. San Diego Chargers.
Yep. And so it's probably by the time he got into wrestling, he had bad knees and it just made him worse. And so here he is, still a relatively young man by 1985. But to Jake's point, what are you going to do in Vince's territory if you can't work?
You know, I met the guy that recruited him to go to Grambling. And he said, the guy said he flew from Monroe, Louisiana to Grambling, to Houston. But they were going to have to take a bus back because Ernie was too big for the plane. It's a little small plane. He said it's the only time he ever recruited somebody and had to stop and get more money because he was eating so damn much. Because Ernie was from a huge family of like 11 kids. And he said, you had to get in there quicker. You didn't get nothing.
Wow.
And finally, he's able to eat everything he wants. They said that when he was in the college, if you wanted to find him, go to the mess hall. Because that's where he'd be, just sitting in there eating all day long.
A guy his size, too, 6'9". Takes a lot of food to keep that man running.
350 pounds, man.
Good Lord.
I wrestled with Ernie quite a bit.
So I did want to ask you too, before we get off of Bill Watts, do you have any specific stories about interactions or like issues that you had with him back then? Were you pushing back, or at this point were you just trying to be a good employee?
No, I just kept my mouth shut, and my hands raised, and my head down.
Probably a safe bet and a smart move to stay in business, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, God, this guy holds your paycheck in his hand, man, and you know, people don't realize how tough those days were. And if you started moving your way up the card, then you don't want to go back down the card, you know? And all it takes is a pencil and an eraser, and you can go from making $1,500 a week to making $700 a week. Now, that was good money then.
Were you under contract?
No, you don't have no contracts. Are you kidding me?
So you're just an independent contractor, just hoping for the best.
When he gave you, the only guarantee we had was we could not make less than $40 per night.
Wow.
And there's a lot of nights I made $40.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, I can see why you had issues with him. He clearly respected you to some degree or at least respected your skill set, because here you are. You're about to be in this very high profile position.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's seen a way to make a buck off of me. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like other people. If they can make a buck off of you, they're going to use you up, you know. It's not like he did me a favor or anything. I mean,
doing himself a favor. He saw the skills.
Did himself a favor, and he knew that I could get in there and make Snowman look good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would do the right shit to make Snowman look good, and I did. But the only problem was the next guy that had him didn't, and he flopped. He flopped like a big, huge fart, man, and he was done.
Well, it takes somebody with a lot of skill to carry somebody who's less skilled.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
There's not a lot of ring technicians around.
No. No. In those days there were, but not anymore.
Would Bill have been the first one to come to you with the Ali idea, or would that have been Jim Ross?
It was Ali.
Ali came to you.
It was, no. It was, you know, it may have been Jim Ross tell me that first.
He was Bill Watts' right-hand man in those days.
Yeah, he was, man. He done a phenomenal job. I love JR to death, man.
And went on to have himself a pretty decent career, right?
Yeah, he's done all right.
He's done okay and still doing okay there with AEW.
He's still scooping a few beans.
We're going to bring Jim Ross up here in a few minutes before we get there. Do you have any details on how the deal was put together? Were you staying away from the office?
No, I have no idea, man. Are you kidding? I do know, I am pretty sure of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ali made more than me.
I you know what? I think that's probably a safe bet. I would venture to guess.
I'm just saying. You know,
I would venture to guess that Watts gave him more than 40.
Oh yeah, yeah, probably more than 40,000.
So
God, that hurts to say it.
God Almighty! What?
I think I got like 2,500 for the match or something.
My goodness.
Ali probably got 75,000.
Well, you know, 9 years earlier, he's getting paid $6 million for a wrestling appearance.
Yeah,
so, you
absolutely.
Know, maybe Watts got off easy.
Yeah, he did.
Well, unfortunately. Well, so, I mean, he's spending all this money, and clearly he sees what happened at WrestleMania 1. He's trying to jump on this train, this pop culture crossover.
He was absolutely desperate at the time because he needed that black superstar.
JYD was gone.
Yeah, he realized that if you're going to have a great show in Louisiana or Mississippi or Arkansas, Southern Arkansas, you've got to have a black superstar. You just got to have it. And Bill Watts got spoiled for all those years that JYD was there. Because as long as JY was there, man, money was rolling in.
Yep. For those of you that don't have a frame of reference on that, JYD was like in that territory. Celebrity, yeah. Like Elvis level celebrity.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We everybody always rode together, and it was just insane. Insane.
So, one day, you and I are going to talk at length about JYD because I'm sure you've got some absolutely fucking wild stories.
Yeah, something I can't tell.
we'll keep it on.
I think the statute of limitations are out on most of them, but anyway.
we'll be careful.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I do want to note, too, and we're about to start the match here in a few minutes, but before we do, so Mid-South would go national a year later and become the UWF, and then 2 years later, he's selling the territory to JCP, and that's all she wrote. So, I mean, Watts is trying this stuff. When you're seeing that, him bringing in, like, Ali, are you optimistic? Like, okay, this might bring the territory around. You knew it was done.
It was done, man. It was done. You know, Vince having national television coverage and going around and raping all the territories, taking all their superstars. And the reason he's able to take them is because the sub-bitches weren't being paid. You know? So at least the pressure of him coming around, it was causing Bill Watts to loosen the purse strings a little bit, but not near enough, man. Are you kidding me? We're driving 2,500, 3,000 miles a week. You know, you drive 250, 300 miles to the show, wrestle, and drive 300 miles back.
Oh.
That's a nice day's work.
And being in a car, maybe getting
600 miles.
Oh, you know, the wrestling is hard. Sitting down for 300 miles in a car is hard, especially for a man your size.
Yeah, and then trying to get out of the car when you got home. My God, man, there's sometimes I'd have to roll out on the ground and then help myself to my feet just to get back up on my feet, man, because my back would have froze up while we were in the car, you know. But
you got a fresh couple Jacksons in your pocket for your trouble.
Yeah, buddy. What you fucking do? Stop at McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah, great. That's worth it.
Brother, I can't tell you that about the worst times I had were in Tennessee. And they didn't have a $40 guarantee. They had a $20 guarantee.
Mm.
Sometimes they didn't meet it.
What?
Yeah, man. I've made $15 for a match before.
Good
sure
Lord.
As hell did. And you know what we did? We four of us got in the car. We stopped at the grocery store. We went in and got a big, thick thing of bologna, a loaf of bread, and we got a six-pack of beer to split between four people. Because that's all the money we had.
So wait, there's two extra beers. Who do those go to at the end of that?
The driver.
Yeah, that's only right. Gotta
make sure he's drunk.
Well, when you were getting ready to go into the match, did anybody make it clear to you that they wanted you to bump for Ali? Because you said Watts was enraged, right?
Yeah. No, that was a given.
Okay. It was just everybody knew that, okay, he's going to bump when Ali.
Yeah, gets everybody it. Knows that. And everybody was right except for me. And I was right, too. Because the next week I was back in New Orleans, and I was the main event. I was getting a return title match against the Snowman.
Who came out on top in that one?
Right. So if I'd have flown for him, what would I have had left? Nothing. I got knocked out by Ali and butt slammed by a Snowman.
And
you gotta save something.
And in less than a year, you found yourself in the WWF. So yeah. I think you took the right path, Jake.
It worked out for me.
All right, we got a video. It's a little bit over 5 minutes, and we're going to cue that up right now. I'll probably do a couple more questions as we watch, a few more after, and we'll call it quits.
What a matchup. Jake the Snake Roberts against the Snowman. Muhammad Ali was there. Bill Watts describes the action.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cowboy Bill Watts here from the floor of the Superdome, and it's pandemonium as you see the man, Muhammad Ali, making a triumphant return for the first time since September of 1978, when he set history to become the only man to regain the world's heavyweight boxing title for the third time, and he defeated Leon Sphinx. And there you see the Barbarian and Jake the Snake waiting in the ring because Ali's here for...
Are you feeling tense when Ali's coming to the ring, or are you loose, feeling good?
No, I'm feeling good, man. I'm having fun.
So at this point, you'd been in wrestling since the late 70s. It's 1985. I'm sure you've been around a lot of celebrities. Yeah. Were you still enchanted by celebrities?
Oh,
at all,
sure. Or, yeah? Especially him. Are you kidding me?
Hard not to be.
Yeah, I mean, even today I would be mouth open wondering what he's going to say just to hear what he had to say, man. I mean, I'd given anything to spend time with that man. Tremendously iron hard. Wrestler that came and taken the there's Ernie Ladd.
Ernie Ladd, there's Snowman.
There's Snowman.
So, I mean, with JYD gone, you can kind of see why Watts gravitated toward the Snowman.
Well, he had to.
He's a big jacked up dude. He looks good. He's got style. But to your point, I saw an interview with him as I was doing research for this, and there was not a lot under the hood.
No. I don't think it was an 8-cylinder.
I will say I'm a little shocked to have seen that he never caught on with Vince. You know, he's a big muscular guy, and you know, Vince was taking big muscular guys without a lot of skill and putting a mouthpiece with him. So kind of weird.
I don't know that Snowman would have had the wear all together to make the road trips and stuff.
Oh really?
Yeah, I just don't think he could have done it, man.
You don't think his heart was in the business, really?
I don't think his mind was carrying.
I gotcha.
You know, airports to hotels to rental cars to, you know. Jake the Snake, Carl Fergie on the scene.
Top wrist lock. So, ahead of this match, what was your first interaction like with Ali?
I didn't talk to him.
At all?
At all.
Did you see him backstage?
No. Bill Watts was like that, man. The heels and baby faces had to keep away from each other.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get to talk in the locker rooms. Are you kidding me? Yeah. That's brilliant, isn't it?
It doesn't seem like a good plan. And then he's mad when things don't turn out the way that he wants it to.
Yeah.
If you had seen him beforehand and he had asked you to bump on the punch, would you have?
Oh, absolutely.
The right thing to do.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to piss you off. You know, and to be quite honest, I was expecting to get one.
Yeah?
Yeah, I kind of thought he might just go ahead and give me one since I don't, but we're going to see.
I was going to ask you that. So we're going to see it here at the end of the match. You take a couple punches from him. And after the first one, I was like, okay, the second one, he's going to fucking bring it because Jake didn't sell enough for it.
Yeah, I was kind of holding my breath, hoping he didn't.
Well, I told you that we were going to bring up Jim Ross again, and here's why. I was listening to his podcast a little bit, an older episode where he had actually talked about this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he felt that you were maybe hesitant to work with Ali for fear that he wouldn't know how to properly work a punch. Is there any truth to that?
No.
I didn't really think so. It's
I didn't care whether he knocked me out or not, man. If he knocked me out, he knocked me out.
It'd make for some good TV, right?
Yeah, damn straight, bro.
He kicked out of the DDT.
That's the only thing that pissed me off that I had to do.
So that was told to you before the match. So oh, yeah. Kicked out.
Yeah. Let him kick out of the DDT. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Is he the only person ever to kick out?
As far as him and Taker.
Wow. Afterwards, you said you had a little interaction with Ali. Were you doing like, hey, can I have a photo? Can I have a pic, an autograph, anything like that?
No.
Was that just unspoken? You don't do that back in those days?
No, you don't do that out of respect.
Ali said he'd get involved if he bothered Bundini. The Snowman has broke the full Nelson.
All right, here we go. Let's track it a little bit, Dom, if you don't mind turning it up. And watch that right on the button. Right up on the button, so quick.
Flow like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and Jake the Snake found out why Ali is the champion. Hell, I took four. Bundini Brownie guarding him on. He's lucky I didn't beat him.
You should have started hulking up, Jake.
Yeah, there you go. Takes the measure of Jake the Snake. Well, good watch for the shot. The Snowman still the television
champion. And all right, there it is. Snowman retains. Doing the Ali shuffle.
Yeah. Does the Ali shuffle. And doing the JY thing, too.
I wonder if he was told to do that.
Probably. Bundini Brown and Muhammad Ali
as Jake the Snake goes down to defeat. All right. Well, that was awesome. Man, just what an incredible memory getting to work with a guy that you said yourself you idolized him as a kid, and now here you are. Selling his punches.
I don't think there's anybody from the 60s and 70s that didn't idolize Muhammad Ali. I mean, let's be real. I mean, if you didn't, it's just because you didn't understand it or didn't watch it. Because mm-hmm. he was a guy that had that it factor, man. You know, he had that natural charisma he was like a big giant magnet, man. If he stood up, you were gravitated right towards him. And if he talked, you listened. And his shit was so good. What are you going to do?
Man, so cool that you got to have a really iconic moment with him, especially in front of a giant crowd like Absolutely. That at the Superdome. Did you ever spend any more time around Muhammad over the course of your career? Sure so this was man. The first and only time you got to be around
that
him.
That was it, man. That was it.
Man, at least you got sucks. That.
I've had several interactions with Tyson. Quite a few, actually.
Yeah.
But Ali, no.
Any good stories from making the rounds with Tyson or seeing Tyson?
Not really. We just talked about this and that. And he pulled me aside one time in L.A. and he says, you and me are just alike. We've been down the same streets. We walked up the same alleys. We've been dirty before. And told me he loved me.
Dude, that's incredible.
So then, of course, I ran into him again when he's at AEW and all, here and there. And it's all good. We just need people to keep coming back and talking to us. And if you get a chance during the holidays, hit Cameo up, man. I'm doing some good stuff for Cameo. I'll give you a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, and let me give you the best Christmas wish you've ever had. I promise you, I'll do it.
That's cameo.com/Jake Snake. You can go check that out. We're almost out the door here. Just wanted to make another quick note. You know, I brought up earlier how boxing and wrestling have helped each other. So get this. It's just really fun and unique how Muhammad Ali tore a page out of Gorgeous George's book. And then when it came to cutting promos years later, guys like superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes took from Ali. And then a little bit further down the road, maybe just a couple years later, Hulk Hogan has said that he credits superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes for his style. So this crazy interweaving thread, and it continues going today. Just really cool that you got those experiences, Jake. Absolutely. And we're giving some really cool experiences here every week on the Snake Pit. Jake, next week, and I haven't brought this up to you yet, so we can edit this out if you want to. I'm thinking about for our first episode of 2023, what if we checked out your return to WWE in 2014? You did a little business with Dean Ambrose and then the Hall of Fame. We don't have to.
Yeah, we can do that.
All right. We're going to take a look back at that period of time. And also, you know, we mentioned the Hall of Fame. Jake, your fellow Hall of Famer and friend of the show, Eric Bischoff, just had his second autobiography. Great.
Yeah, man. Out.
And
dude does well.
Dude, the reaction so far has been incredible. He's doing something really unique, too, where he's got QR codes that you can scan, and they lead to specific interviews to provide even more context on what you're reading. It's a really innovative idea. Cool. Yeah, and he's a guy who's really accomplished so much in the business. You can get your copy of Grateful now on Amazon or at bischoffbook.com. If you have a question for Jake, you can ask it on Twitter, at SnakePitPod. If you want to introduce a fan or a friend or a family member to the show, maybe consider sending them over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@SnakePitPod.
Yeah.
Yep. We've got some really cool bite-sized samples over there. So if anybody's like, I don't want to invest an hour and a half. Okay. Go over there and check it out. We've got plenty of cool clips that show you what our show is all about. And while you're there, like, subscribe, and hit the notifications bell so you don't miss any of the new content that we're dropping there. Also, if you've enjoyed our podcast, please like, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review on all platforms. Man, that helps us out a ton and keeps us going with this podcast. It's free on every podcast platform. Here's just a reminder. You can get the Snake Pit Pod and all the other shows in our network early and ad-free at adfreeshows.com, starting at just $9 per month. That's even less than 15 cents an episode each month. Plus, tons of bonus content, interactive chats with your favorite hosts and wrestling personalities, and much more. Head over to adfreeshows.com today. Jake had mentioned the cameo, but guys, you can also get some exclusive Jake the Snake merch signed by the Hall of Famer himself at jakethesnakeshop.com. There's some really cool stuff there, and I know Jake is planning on bringing in some more cool stuff.
Yep.
You can catch Jake on Twitter at JakeSnakeDDT, on Instagram at JakeTheSnakeDDT, and on Facebook at RealJakeTheSnake. You can follow me at Marcus P. D'Angelo on Twitter, and you can follow the podcast at SnakePitPod on all social platforms. Jake, episode 4 in the books.
I tell you what, if there's anybody out there struggling with addiction or alcoholism and you want some help and you're really ready to quit, contact me. I'll see if I can help you out.
How about that, guys? Jake the Snake Roberts himself wants to help all of you in the way that he was helped. And if you're struggling, as he said, with alcoholism or drug addiction, feel free to reach out and Jake will point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. Good night, guys.
All right, gang. We'll catch you next time right here on The Snake Pit with Jake Roberts.